Good morning, everyone. It is November 8th, 2021. This is the ADK Homeroom. I am your host, Frank. This is your home away from homeroom. It is great to have you here. The first day after daylight savings time. Wow, what a trip daylight savings time is every year. It is the dumbest thing. Puts everyone out of sorts for no good reason at all. But do you know who is most out of sorts of all the people in the world today? That would be Ron Wyden. That's right, U.S. Senator, sitting U.S. Senator Ron Wyden. Nobody is feeling as bad as he is today. He's the chairman of the Senate Finance Committee, for God's sakes. And he's from Oregon. And if you don't know what happened, Elon Musk single-handedly made America great again. What? It happened on Twitter, of course. And if you're not aware, there is this horrendous evil idea floating around Washington, D.C. to tax unrealized capital gains. It doesn't even make sense for a million reasons. How can you tax something that you don't even know what the value of it is going to be when the person actually realizes the value of it? But anyway, this idea is floating around because Washington is desperate and they'll grasp at anything. So this idea of taxing unrealized capital gains is floating around, and Elon Musk, of course, realizes it's an insane idea. And part of his response to it is he puts up this poll, right? So he puts up this poll on Twitter, and he says, I will abide by this poll. Do you guys think that I should sell 10% of my stock in Tesla? And of course, one of the things this might do is maybe it'll tank the price of Tesla stock, right? And indeed, did go down about 1% yesterday. And Elon Musk says he will abide by the results of this poll. And the yeses won. People said yes, he should sell. He should sell his stock. It won by like 60% to 40%. And then, of course, you know, once he sells it, he can pay the taxes on it under the current scheme. So Elon Musk ran that poll, and then, much to his eternal regret, Ron Wyden decided to jump into this, right? If you're not aware, one of the big rules is you don't go in against Elon Musk on Twitter. The guy owns the medium. He's got, you know, he could have people working for it. I think he might just be doing it himself. But if he wanted, he could have a way bigger staff than Ron Wyden could manning his Twitter account. Anyway, so Wyden commits the sin of going in against Elon Musk. And Wyden puts up this tweet that says, you know, tax policy is super important and it shouldn't be decided by a poll on Twitter. And we need a billionaire's income tax. Harumph. Right? He's like the old grumpy curmudgeon glomping into the room and laying down the law to the little school kids, right? So Wyden comes in, we need a billionaire's tax, we shouldn't be deciding this by poll. And then Elon tweets back at him in front of God and the internet and 22 million followers and everybody. Elon tweets back, why does your PP look like you just came? Oh my God, it's what he said. Why does your pee-pee look like you just came? Pog right there. Absolute ownage. Musk is the pog. I mean, one of the great things about that is it's so figurative, right? It's so figurative. It's not literal. It is, I guess, a reference in part. It's a little bit ekphrastic, because it's a little bit of a description of his Twitter profile picture, right? All their rockets, Bezos and Musk, their rockets are quite phallic. So it is being interpreted as a reference to that. But it's figurative language. It's not literal. Literal meaning is just ew. But that's not really to the point. The point is it's the style and the panache, and it's the attitude and what it is, what it makes you think of. It's a turning away from the literal here. It's a trope. Just the perfect response to the senator. And again, this is a sitting senator, the chairman of the Senate Finance Committee. And Elon Musk is asking him why his PP looks like he just came. Oh my goodness. So, yeah, I mean, I'm gonna start doing that. I'm gonna be like, you know, my wife, I'm gonna like call her in. I'm gonna be like in the middle of the night, oh no, I couldn't do that. That'd be terrible. No, why would I wake her up just to call her into the bathroom and get her all out of sorts and then make it just a Musk joke? No, I could not do that to Beth. What a great statement by Musk, though. All right, so let's keep going here. Yesterday, like I was saying, it was daylight savings time. Nobody likes daylight savings time. There are some movements out there to finally abolish it, which would be great, right? For one thing, the farmers would love it. Farmers obviously hate daylight savings time. And you know why they hate it is because cows don't have wristwatches. You know, cows don't have conception of time. They're the dumbest animals on the farm. And they're going to wake up at the same time, regardless of what the humans are doing with their clocks. That abstract 12-hour clock thing, or even 24-hour clock thing, which is a little simpler, cows have no truck with that. Cows are stupid, right? You don't hear, they're dumber than the other animals. If you haven't been on a farm, right? I mean, you don't hear about people going out and pig tipping, right? Because the pigs, they won't have none of that. You hear about people going cow tipping because the cows are so stupid and oblivious. Cows will get tipped over. They got no idea what's going on. But plenty of other animals, you know, pigs are too smart for that stuff. Pigs will put a hurt on you, right? I mean, they ambushed Shakira last month, right? If you don't know about that, go read about Shakira in basically downtown Barcelona getting ambushed. 1,300 pig assaults, by the way, in Barcelona in 1 year. Yeah, 1,300 pig attacks in Barcelona in 1 year. Pigs are taking over Europe, right? They're probably dressing up like mountains so the Navy can't identify them. Because, as you know, the Navy can't identify a mountain. It runs into mountains. But, yeah, I mean, the pigs are taking over. I think the original Hitchcock movie was going to be the pigs instead of the birds, probably, right? It was going to be the pigs instead of the birds. And then in some smoky room in Ireland somewhere, Senior Porky sat down with Alfred and said, "That's a nice silhouette you have there. It'd be a shame if it got mauled." Yeah, so pigs really are smart and super dangerous. Go read about it. Anyway, the point is that cows can't handle daylight savings time. The natural world can't handle daylight savings time. And people are natural. We're animals too. And I can't handle it. It's time to just end daylight savings time. Oh, okay. Let's keep going here. New book out from Anaheed Nersession. It's called Keats' Odes, A Lover's Discourse. So right away, right, Nersession's telling us, ooh, I know everything. This is a discourse, right? This is not a review. This is not an appreciation. This is not an exploration. This is a discourse. Ooh, okay. Okay, Miss Nersession. And in this new book on Keats, she claims that his famous ode on a Grecian urn is actually a catcall. That's right. It's a poem about a vase. And she says it's a catcall and it has an air of substantial menace. She does everything but come out and say she's terrified of this poem. She does everything but come out and say we have to protect our kids from this poem about a vase. I mean, come on. These people, they see rape everywhere. Now, I've been to Athens. I've looked at urns there, the red and the black. It's gorgeous, right? Makes you think a little bit of Stendhal. But you know, I, as I was looking at these vases, I never thought it was going to jump out of its museum case and rape me, right? Throw me down there, ravish me, guards trying to pull that demented pottery off of me while it's up there slapping me. Call me Zeus, bitch. I mean, it's a vase. Come on. This is silly. But this goes to the progressive mindset, I guess. And Recession is a Marxist. She approaches all her literature criticism from a Marxist point of view, or almost all. And that's what they see out there, right? Rape. Rape all day. Rape on the subway going to work. Rape at Starbucks. Here, I have your Vante here with your name on it. Oh, let me just put it back in the warmer. You can pick it up after your rape. This is what they see. They think that, you know, hide your kids, hide your husbands too, because they're raping everybody out here, as Antoine Dodson would say. Oh my goodness. But and you know, like I said, she's a Marxist, and this is par for the course, right? You know what happens if you ask a Marxist, you ask Marxists to choose between a couple approaches. What do you think is best, Miss Marxist? You ask a Marxist, what do you think is closest to the truth? Which one is correct? Your formalist text-based reading, or a dialectic reading like Hume, or maybe a dialectical materialist reading? Which one, on balance, net analysis here, do you think, Miss Marxist, comes out ahead? And you know what the Marxist chooses? Take a second, think what the Marxist chooses. I will tell you, the Marxist chooses to punch you in the face. That's right. I mean, they don't care about which reading is correct. They don't even think that there is such a concept as correct. They don't think you can disagree about anything based on honest analysis. They think that the truth is just this social construct, right? That's what critical race theory is, right? A critical theory is this idea that something is just a social construct, and critical race theory is just the racial version of that. And so they think that correctness and rightness and getting close to the truth is just down to social construct. And by you posing that question, that betrays your evil nature and your alliance with the oppressors. And, you know, so just by asking that, you're going to get punched in the face, right? They will call you a Nazi, and then she will call her friends in Antifa, and they will punch you in the face because they've been on a years-long campaign to normalize punching Nazis, right? That's their big catchphrase online. It's okay to punch a Nazi. Go punch a Nazi. And then they will call you a Nazi just for saying, we should find the best way to do something. Yeah. And a lot of rationalists don't understand this. They do not understand that some people on the other side will not be reached by anything like an appeal to reason or truth or objective rational analysis. It's not going to happen. So let's move on. Over the weekend, also, an appeals court blocked Biden's mandate for the vaccines, right? The vaccine mandate. Fifth Circuit, Louisiana, Mississippi, Texas is what that circuit covers. They issued the injunction, the stay. And you could tell that it came from Louisiana, Mississippi, Texas, Fifth Circuit, because at the end of the ruling, it said, we cite grave statutory and constitutional concerns, possibly originating in the fact that this mandate was written by senile, hair-sniffing, meat-and-sleeping, damn fool of a Yankee. No, they didn't actually write it like that. But you sometimes wonder, right? You sometimes wonder, what if justices could write stuff like that, right? Like Gorsuch, at the end of that Bostock ruling recognizing trans rights, imagine what Gorsuch would have said, right, if he could have. You remember that? I always picture Janice Ian in Mean Girls. Remember, she stands up and she reads that F.U. to the junior girls, and then she says, la, 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 and she turns her back on him, and trust falls into her adoring junior girl pals. I kind of feel like that's what Gorsuch wanted to do at the end of the Bostock ruling, right? Just stand up and say, suck on that, la, 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 and then do a trust fall back into the other eight justices. That would have been great. I mean, he probably would have flattened Kagan. Kagan probably would have been a pancake, but I mean, you know, would have been interesting anyway. So 27 out of 50 states signed on to this lawsuit opposing this vaccine mandate. I mean, come on, 27 out of 50. That's 54%, obviously. Can you think of another federated organization where if more than half of its members didn't want to do anything, they'd still try to force that thing through? Like if only 46%, less than half, right? What if 46% of the NFL decided they should never play night games because of the increased drunkenness and death and traffic accidents that results? That's true. Maybe 46% would want to do that. You think the NFL will go along with that, with only 46% in support of that? I mean, what if less than half of Disney fans, what if only like 40, 45% of Disney fans wanted to make the next Marvel movie about a superhero group that no one, not even big Marvel fans, has ever heard of, much less cared about, called like The Eternals? Do you think they would make such a movie about such scrubs? Oh, wait, they just did. Oh, sorry, Disney. Yeah, they did make a movie about a super group that nobody cares about. That was just dumb. But I mean, Disney is fools right now. Look how they handled the Star Wars franchise. Look at what they did with poor Gina Carano. And look at Mulan. Mulan actually thanks, in the credits for Mulan, Mulan thanks the people who run the Uyghur torture camps out in Western China. So yeah, Disney's idiots. Search your hearts. You know it to be true. Disney is stupid now. Not quite perhaps as stupid as the vaccine mandate from Biden, but still pretty stupid. Next on our list for today, close to home here, close to the home of the ADK podcast, right over in Montpelier, Vermont, we had quite the absurdity. Quite the absurdity. I think I'm titling this episode Absurdities of the Peignoir. Goes well with waking up Sunday morning to daylight savings time, doesn't it? I think it does. Absurdities of the Peignoir. A salute to Wallace Stevens. Just give it a few years. Give it a few years, Wallace Stevens, and you too can have Marxists saying that your poems amount to a sexual assault, sexual harassment. Just give it a couple of years. Mm-hmm. Take from the dresser of deal. How dare you take from the dresser of deal? That's assault on the dresser. Oh my gosh. And you're identifying it as of deal? Oh wait, actually identifying something by its skin color is supposed to be okay now? I don't know. I don't think it is. But apparently most people do. Okay, so anyway, back to Montpelier here. Another absurdity of the peignoir. Over in Montpelier, Vermont, USA Today just gave them a banner. Just gave Montpelier a win, a W for Montpelier. And what is this win? Well, the USA Today Board of Editors just named Montpelier, Vermont, the best in the United States small town for shopping. Mm-hmm. Now, little old me here, right? I'm just running a podcast. I'm just a teacher. So what do I know? But I kind of feel like it was a poor decision of USA Today to name Montpelier the best small town for shopping without ever having shopped in Montpelier. I mean, they must not have, right? Because those of us who have are saying, what? W with a hat on it? What? Are you kidding me? How? And it's not just me. It's not just me, right? Because executive director of Montpelier Alive, right? What an organization. The executive director of Montpelier Alive, NBC5, contacted him and asked him for his thoughts on this. And here's what he said. He said, you know, some people heard this and they said to me, really? Montpelier, the best small town for shopping? I mean, okay. So this executive director here, he needs to work on his PR game a little bit. Somebody gives you that title, you take it and run. Okay. You just take it and you go with it. But that response is the response of someone who knows that shenanigans are being pulled. We are up to the level. We are up to some shenanigans here. I mean, but you know he's speaking the truth, right? First of all, just look at his organization's name. It's called Montpelier Alive. It's called that because it's dying. You need an organization called Montpelier Alive because the town is in danger of not being alive. Oh my gosh. You know, you go over there and eat at the Skinny Pancake. Love the Skinny Pancake. Big shout out to the Skinny Pancake. That's what Montpelier is good for, right? The Skinny Pancake and, you know, fancy stuff, right? The Crepe Maker. Okay, you can buy a Crepe Maker there. You want some 60-year-old Karen clothes? You can find some 60-year-old Karen clothes there, right? Something like a mock turtleneck. Oh, you could find that out of several different materials in Montpelier. But look, you go to the Skinny Pancake, you need to use the restroom in Skinny Pancake. What do? They don't have a restroom in Skinny Pancake, but they're in the part of this giant, giant cavernous complex whose only other occupants right now, at least when I was there last, were government-funded agencies. And so you have to walk through this half-abandoned. It's like going through a mall in America these days on like Tuesday at noon with the lights off. You walk through this spooky, cavernous complex to get to this bathroom that's at the other side of it. It's like a ghost town there in downtown Montpelier. And this is the best small town shopping in America. What does USA Today think small town America is like? I don't know. And the executive director of Montpelier Life, he doesn't stop there. He keeps going on and he says, hardly a chain store around. Right. So what makes you a good town for shopping is what you don't have. You call up the Montpelier Chamber of Commerce. Where can I go to buy some socks? Oh, well, you can't go to Walmart. You can't go to Target. Can't go to Old Navy. Doesn't that make us great? Isn't our shopping great? You can't go to Gap. Isn't that great? Oh, come on. You don't become great by not having things. Yeah. And then at the end of the interview, the guy says, hardly a chain store around. It's rare. It's unique. It's special. Okay. But you know what rare, unique, special? None of those words mean good for shopping. None of those don't, right? Next time USA Today is looking around for shopping, you call somebody up. The first question you ask is, do you have stores there? Seriously, people in Montpelier, they drive to Burlington to shop, right? They go to Burlington to shop. This is nuts, right? But do you know who Montpelier is doing better as a municipal entity? Do you know who Montpelier is doing better than? They are doing much better than San Francisco. Oh, good old San Francisco, right? San Francisco Chronicle, the newspaper out there, taking some flack for running an article recently. Did you see it? The headline is, residents and city leaders are searching for answers. Should they tolerate burglaries as a part of city living and focus on barricading homes? Have I mentioned I'm glad I don't live in San Francisco? Wow. Searching for answers, they say. This headline says residents and city leaders, both of them, are searching for answers. Should they tolerate burglaries, focus on barricading homes instead? Searching for answers? I will tell you the answer you're searching for. It's no. It's no, you should not tolerate that. The answer you're looking for, no, it can be found right after the word hell, as in hell no. What are you thinking? Good Lord, SF Chronicle. Should they just accept the fact as a fact of life that theft is going to happen, learn how to barricade their homes? Yeah, barricades are like, you say barricade, I'm calling Eponine, I'm calling Marius and Gavroche and Enjolras, right? And we can man the barricade. And it's 1832 Paris because, you know, that barricade in Les Mis worked out so well. And let me just point out, right, if that's your alternative, you're saying, you know, tolerate burglaries as a part of city living and focus on barricading your home. If you're barricading your home, you are not tolerating the burglary. You are actively working to stop the burglary if you are... if you are barricading your home, this is just silly. That's fighting against burglaries. What you're actually tolerating, what you're actually accepting is that the police won't stop the burglary. The government is so incompetent that they can't stop the burglary. That's what you're tolerating. You're not actually accepting the burglary if you're barricading your home. You are accepting that the police aren't going to save you. So not only is this just a weird acid trip of a headline from the Chronicle, but it also is not internally logical and it doesn't respect the meaning of the words. That's not what accepting burglaries would look like. And finally, it makes me really question whether these people running this newspaper and these people reading this newspaper, what they mean when they say tolerance, right? When they say tolerance, that we should tolerate people of different faiths, that we should tolerate people of different races, different ethnicities. When they say tolerance, is this the kind of tolerance they're talking about? Well, sure, I'll tolerate you, but let me just go ahead and board up my door so you can't get in. Is that your sort of tolerance? Yeah, sure, I tolerate you, but let me just put a spike punji trap pit in front of my welcome mat here so you can't come over. Is that really what tolerance means to these guys? Oh, talk about absurdities of the peignoir. Now, so that was San Francisco, a place pretty similar to San Francisco. Russia, yeah. Well, actually, this took place in Berlin, but it was a Russian. Another Russian just fell out of a window and died in Berlin, right? This one happened to be, this particular Russian gentleman, happened to be the son of a big general. By some reports, the number three general at their second service, super secret second service. How's that for some alliteration? Over in Russia there, right? It's a counterterrorism and intelligence agency associated with the FSB. Probably these guys are the ones responsible for poisoning everyone's favorite dissident, Navalny. He of the giant balls. I mean, come on. That guy flew back into Russia. He knew what was going to happen. That takes some serious gumption. I mean, that's like asking a sitting U.S. Finance Committee chairman why his pee-pee looks like he just gave Navalny with some big, big ones there. But anyway, so this Second Service, they're the ones who probably poisoned Navalny. These are some serious dudes. And you have to wonder what this general did, right? Because probably they killed his son to get back at the general, I guess. I don't know. That's complete speculation on my part. But yeah, the son worked in the Russian state apparatus as well. So who knows what's going on here? Probably never find out. But we do know that this is not unusual, right? This Russian fell out of a window in Berlin this past week. But, you know, remember at the start of the pandemic, three or four Russian doctors fell out of hospital windows in Moscow, right? After saying, oh, the conditions here are terrible. Pandemic's overtaking us. I tested positive myself as a doctor, but they're making me continue to work and sticking me into these overcrowded hospitals. Whoa, out the window you go. Oh, just happened to fall down. Reporter Maxim Borodin, remember him? In 2018, he was reporting on how the Russian military was hiring mercenaries all around the room. And then what happened? Oh, he fell out of his fifth story window. Sorry, Maxim. 2017, you had that lawyer, right? Nikolai Gorokov. Do you remember him? He was a witness for the U.S. government in that big court case over in Russia. And what happened to Nikolai? Oh, fell out the window, died. You know, maybe USA Today could vote Russia the number one country for defenestration. That would be good, right? Give them that honor. I think that would make more sense than Montpelier for best shopping, right? Because clearly Russia does have this whole defenestration proclivity. That's their thing, man. That sort of thing is their bag, baby. Out the window. Russia's, you know, let's face it. If you really believe that these guys are falling out windows, then you probably believe that Epstein killed himself. I mean, it's just, you know, unlikely. It is unlikely. You know, you probably believe, and there's no evidence either way to be sure, but you probably believe, if you believe these guys are falling out windows, you probably believe there's no point in investigating the origin of the Wuhan virus over there. Because, sure, it just happened to be that this respiratory virus, this coronavirus, came out and started its plague in the one city in the entire nation, world's most populous nation, that just happened to have a lab that was doing research on pandemic causing coronavirus, respiratory viruses. It just happened to start there. Oh, but, you know, Russians just happen to fall out of windows too. Just happens. These are the things that go on in our world. They just happen. Don't try to find their causes. No point investigating that. No, no, no. It just happens. Hey, kudos to the Russians, right, for not following the Epstein approach. They're cutting out the middleman. They don't need to bother arresting anybody first. Just throw them right out the window. No need for the Manhattan Detention Center. No need for any sort of cover-up involving the jail guards and anything like that. No need for a botched first attempt. Just, you know, throw them out the window. That's it. Wash your hands and be done with it. It's terrible. Terrible. So I think I listed about four places that I'm really glad I don't live today. Wow. I'm going to go out there and enjoy where I do live. I'm going to take my dog on a walk. Maybe we'll go up above the snow line. Got no snow down here, but there is some gorgeous snow up on the tops, the tippy tops of the highest mountains up here. So maybe we'll do that, and maybe we'll be an hour late coming back because, or an hour early. I don't even know, because stupid daylight savings time. Oh my gosh, I hope you adjust pretty well on this Monday morning. Thank you for listening. Please remember to subscribe. Please remember to find me on Twitter, ADK Homeroom. Feel free to slide on into my DMs and let me know what you think of the podcast. I value your feedback tremendously. I value your feedback much more than Elon Musk values the chairman of the Senate Finance Committee. You all have a great day. Take care.